The purpose of Retire with Style is to help you discover the retirement income plan that is right for you. The first step is to discover your retirement income personality. Start by going to risaprofile.com/style and sign up to take the industry's first financial personality tool for retirement planning. Well, it's time to put a voice to the voice. It only took 14 episodes, but Wade and Alex finally invited me to join them as we discuss the markets. I'm Bob French, and in addition to running Retirement Researcher and being the disembodied voice here, I'm also the Director of Investment Analysis at McLean Asset Management. There's a lot of stuff, to use a technical term, going on in the markets now. So let's talk about it.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Retire with Style. I'm Alex, and I'm here with
Wade
and
Bob French.
And Bob French.
The voice you've been hearing at the start the entire time here. I'm finally here.
That's right. That's right. If any of you have been wondering whose dulcet tones, and that's to borrow Bob's phrase when he describes it, he's doing the intros and the cutaways. That's Mr. French right here. Welcome, Bob.
Welcome. Thank you.
The broadcast announcer. That's why we have him here today.
That's right. Once Al Michaels joined the Thursday night Amazon team, Bob had no other choice but to come back to us. Bob, do you wanna say a little bit about yourself so everyone knows who you're listening to?
Sure. I'm the third person in the retirement researcher type of group here. As you've probably seen if you've been paying attention to Retirement Researcher or seen some of our stuff, I tend to be more focused on kind of the investment angle of things. Coming through kind of on the investment side of the world, coming up through asset management and then joined up with these guys back in the in-stream days. Then just kind of been tagging along ever since. So.
Yeah, so, Bob fills that role of the investment analyst and investment researcher with the retirement researcher community.
Not quite the right term there, but.
Now, as you know, he's very humble because he said he's positioning himself as, hey, he's the third guy here, but he's really number one in our hearts. I mean,
that's where it matters here, Alex.
Yeah, come on, Bob. No, and Bob is also the director of investments at McLean Asset Management. Really, Bob, there's very few people that know more about the overall investment theory, practical application than Bob. He's really good, and we're fortunate to have him here. All it took is an email, and lo and behold, here he is. But no, go on, Wade.
Well, and to Bob's point, like, investment analyst is not the right term because Bob's not someone who's going to be choosing individual securities, but really having that understanding of the broader financial markets, long-term stock and bond returns, and that's all what we want to talk about today to really dig into. This is a current events episode, so if you are listening to this at some point in the future, you'll know how everything played out. You can see if Bob knew what he was talking about. But in the meantime,
we'll see how bad my predictions are here.
In the meantime, there's a lot going on in the financial markets as we're recording in mid-May 2022. And we really want to just walk through that with Bob today to get a good sense both what's going on and put in historical context around that as well.
No, you're right, Wade. This is a current events episode. When Wade and I were thinking about, okay, what are we going to fill the podcast with? We knew that we had enough research to discuss, and we knew that we could bring in guests. But we also knew that there'd be inflection points during the year where, you know, you don't want to come across as tone deaf with your podcast, and you want to, you know, address what's happening right now, especially when there are events that are quite newsworthy or in the news, better said. Whether they're newsworthy or not, I don't know, but they're in the news. And so this is definitely one of those. So with that, Bob, what's been happening?
Yeah, so as Wade said, it's mid-May 2022. We're actually recording this over the weekend. And year to date, the markets have not been awesome. Through the close of the 13th, May 13th, markets have been down a little over 16% on the year. We're seeing high inflation, just not fun stuff. And also those rising rates kind of going along with that high inflation. It's got a lot of people kind of thinking back to the 70s, which for a host of reasons were not the best time in the world. People have started throwing around the term kind of stagflation. And generally, people are just kind of worried about a bear market and, also a recession at the same time, which is obviously not a good combination. I think a good way to start this off is kind of talking a little bit about why we're seeing what it is that we're seeing, and trying to second guess or psychoanalyze or whatever term you want the market is always dicey. But, I think there's some things we can kind of say with some degree of certainty.
So
go ahead, Alex. I'm sorry.
Bob, just to get this clear. So you said the markets have not been awesome?
They have not been awesome.
Hey, thank you. Thank you for that. No, wait, I don't know. I read the headline even yesterday. It was like, there's only a handful of times that it's gone down for 6 weeks in a row, for greater than 10%, it's amazing.
It's kind of every day, it's like 2 days in a row, the market loses 2.5%, then it's up 2.5%, and then it's just a wild time. And you hinted at it as well, Bob. It's not just the stock market with the S&P 500 being down year to date 16%. But when interest rates go up, probably most of our listeners understand this point, but it's an important point. You can also lose on bond funds. As interest rates go up, there are capital losses. So that people may be looking at their portfolio of stock and bond funds and seeing major losses for both of those categories.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I would say one quick thing, and this is I kind of find myself always giving this comment. Bonds and bond funds, real quick, because this is Retire with Style and we're interested in retirement income strategies. When we say bond funds, are bond funds better than bonds and stuff like that? And I'll do this quickly. For us, we view bond funds as a component of an investment portfolio that you're potentially going to use within a total return strategy. We think it's very appropriate there because you're using it to balance volatility, et cetera. Mm-hmm. Comment could be, well, Wade just said they're down. Fair point, and Bob will discuss that. The other piece is, when we're looking at individual bonds, we view those as, you're matching the duration for your spending, et cetera, and that's within a time segmentation strategy and the like. And so that's how we make our distinction. So I wouldn't listen to this thinking bond funds, well, I'm just going to buy individual bonds and hold them to maturity and they'll never go down. It doesn't work that easily. It becomes a mental game. But I'll just leave it at that. I wanted to point that out because it's a very common question that we get.
Yeah, and just to kind of elaborate on that, Alex's point there about the distinction between bond funds and bonds is really important because if you are holding at least a typical bond to maturity, you sincerely do not care what interest rates are. You are locked into that particular payment. Now you might care, you will care if you're going out and buying more bonds at some point in the future, because that's going to determine the price that you pay there. But the ones you hold, to the extent that, the issuer, company, government, whoever it is, doesn't, default, you've got that money effectively. So
yeah, your losses are just on paper. If you sold it, you would experience a loss. But when you hold it to maturity, you know what you're going to get. Now, we'll also be talking about inflation, which is another issue.
Yep.
If you were expecting the maturity value of that bond to pay for such and such amount of goods
Absolutely.
And services, you might not get that full purchasing power if inflation's higher than you were expecting it to be. But yeah, that's Absolutely. The distinction. Bond funds, you can't hold to maturity. So if you're selling shares to fund retirement expenses, you're forced into locking in losses. But let's get into this issue. So why is this happening? What's going on in the financial markets that's been causing this kind of strain with these losses?
Yeah, so like I said, it's always tough to kind of decompose why the market's going to do what it has done. What it's done. But I think it's safe to say that essentially what we're seeing is effectively a surfeit of good news. You know, things have just been kind of better than we expected. So, you know, obviously we're coming out of effectively the pandemic downturn, if you will. And it didn't, from an economic standpoint, it didn't last all that long. But it certainly screwed up a lot of kind of businesses and supply chains and all that stuff. But during that same time, people just haven't been spending nearly as much. They haven't been going on trips. They haven't been, you know, making these big purchases, all this type of stuff. And now they're looking to do so. Now they're looking to spend that money they didn't spend over the past couple years. So what we're left with is a situation where, you know, these businesses, they can't hire fast enough. They can't produce enough. So there's a lower supply and there's a higher demand because people want to spend all of that money they didn't spend previously. So we're seeing rising inflation. And now because of that, you know, the Fed is coming in and trying to tamp that down. You know, meaning that they're going to raise those interest rates, which, you know, the market in terms of the stock and bond markets don't tend to like as much. So, you know, that's going to kind of depress what the markets are doing here. And, you know, because we're in this kind of inflationary scenario, we don't have that same kind of Fed put that is often talked about in terms of the Fed effectively kind of supporting asset prices. You know, they're just not going to do that because that goes against their actual mandate of, you know, managing inflation as well as, you know, trying to maintain a relatively high level of employment. But one thing that I want to kind of emphasize here is that, you know, oftentimes the Fed kind of gets an oversized role, or people kind of place an oversized role on the Fed for asset prices. You know, there's kind of that immediate effect that we always see when the Fed makes whatever move they're going to make, whether they raise or lower rates. But that tends to, or not doesn't, that doesn't tend to, it does get priced in almost immediately. When you look at how those changes impact future returns, there's really not an impact there. You know, I've looked at this in the past, looking at effective Fed rates, so what the rates actually are and how they kind of gyrate day to day. There's really no correlation with stock prices. You know, there's some other research out there looking at Fed's targeted rate, which, you know, they should at the very least rhyme. But, you know, there's no real impact on asset prices. And it's really the same story on the bond side of the world. You know, the Fed will have that impact initially, you know, as we've talked about, you know, as interest rates move, you know, that's almost one of the few kind of identities in the financial world. You know, as interest rates go up, bond prices come down.
Bob, just a little break in the action with regards to bonds, because we started saying, you know, stocks dropped roughly, what, 16%?
16%, like yeah.
I think the magnitude of drop on the bond funds in, you know, just this year alone has been as significant on a, mm-hmm. you know, on a relative basis. Like, right? It's been like 20 years, something like that, since bonds have dropped.
Yeah.
It depends exactly what
you're looking at and how you measure it, but yeah, a long time. It's a bad.
Remember, market. We did our quarterly review, and it was like it was an insane number. Do you remember off the top of your head what it was?
I don't remember what number you're specifically referring to, but I mean, it's definitely been one of the worst markets for bonds in a long time. You know, literally decades. And you know, that's kind of. Basically because of, well, to a very large extent anyway, there's other stuff going on, but to a large extent, because the Fed has risen or has increased those rates, those interest rates, which, you know, push rates up along the spectrum.
Yeah, and maybe a point to also remind our listeners as well. So the maturity length of the bond has a relationship to how much that potential loss could be. And we've seen the 10-year Treasury rate has come up by more than 1% since the start mm-hmm. of the year. It's going to then, if as interest rates go up, that 10-year bond's going to lose a higher portion of its value compared to shorter-term bonds, but then even longer-term bonds have this higher duration, so they have a bigger impact when interest rates go up. A 30-year treasury is going to lose even more than a 10-year treasury.
If you're looking for more personal advice, please note that our show is sponsored by McLean Asset Management. Learn more at McLeanAM.com. That's McLeanAM.com. McLean Asset Management is a wealth management firm where we help you design and implement the right retirement plan for you.
Wait, what I would add to this, because some, you know, there's a lot of, we have a few people listening, right? We have pre-retirees, post-retirees, you know, people that have been retired. What context do you recommend they should be listening to what we're saying? You know, because some of this, if you're in an accumulation-based portfolio, that's one way of interpreting it. If you're in a distribution-based portfolio, that's another way of looking at it. If you're within the distribution-based, a total return strategy would be very different than someone implementing an income protection versus time segmentation, et cetera.
Right. So if you're still in the accumulation phase, it's psychologically it can be tough, but really this can, anytime there's a market downturn and you're able to save new funds, it's an opportunity to purchase more shares at a lower discounted value. So that's how I personally am, and it's hard, but to try to think about it as, you know, I'm really not happy my assets are losing value, but actually I can purchase more when I add new contributions to my savings account. The problem really gets into, as I approach retirement and get into retirement, that's where the sequence of returns risk becomes an issue, where if markets are down and I need to take a distribution to fund my retirement expenses, that forces me to lock in the losses. And that's, then it becomes the issue of, am I comfortable managing that type of market volatility in retirement? And, or do I want to look and take the retirement income style awareness, the RISA, and figure out if that may be the right style for me, or there's other styles or other strategies as well that an individual can think about.
And I
hopefully do that before any sort of market downturn happens.
No, and I think that's important, simply because, I mean, it was in a, I mean, you mentioned it briefly, but before the podcast, but literally there's Bill Bankman. And, you know, total return. The market's happening, the market's going, you know, downward, and he's readjusting his asset allocation in a significant manner, you know, violating many of his own tenets in his, 4% rule kind of thing. And that's where the idea is, you want to make sure you've locked in a strategy beforehand and have automated it. And now if you subject yourself to a total return strategy in retirement, then this, what we're going through right now, is par for the course. I mean, it's what you've signed up for, effectively. Wade?
Right. And to, I've had an exchange now with Bill Bengen on this point that, yes, his research said if you're going to use a total return investing strategy, never go under 50% stocks. But, and this is where Bob has this very academic view of the financial markets, which...
No, that's a good thing, Bob.
Market timing doesn't work, but his explanation for being in 20% stocks now is simply he subscribes to a service that is providing a recommendation stock allocation, which is a great lead-in to some of the other issues we want to discuss of, if the market is down 16% to date, what necessarily does that mean will happen the rest of the year? And ultimately, can we know? Just because Right. The market's down right now, does that mean we're somehow in this new trajectory where it's going to continue to go down? Or how significant is this market downturn? I think there's a lot of different issues we can discuss here, Bob. Maybe the first one is just placing in context right now, how does this compare to other types of market downturns we've seen?
Yeah, so I mean, one thing that I want to stress is that, you know, I'm looking at data for the last 20 years, but, you know, it's for the last ever, you know, you almost never see a year where the market's not down by, you know, a reasonable degree at some point, even during really good years. Just going back 2009, you know, the low point intra year was down 27%. ended the year up 28%. You know, as of 2012, it was down 10, ended up 16. You know, this is not even talking about 2020. It was, you know, for obvious reasons, it was down 35% at its lowest. And it ended up the year at up 21%. The market's gonna do what the market's going to do. So, you know, quite possibly if we're looking at it on, you know, what's gonna happen to the market across the entirety of 2022, yeah, the market's got a long way to make up if we're gonna have a positive year, but that's kind of the wrong question to be asking. You know, because the market's already done what it's going to do. We, you know, doesn't matter what happens next, you know, this 16% loss is already baked in. What matters is what's going to happen next. So really one of the things that we want to focus on is, well, first off, let's put this in a little bit of context. So, you know, if we're looking at it, we're kind of in the middle of the month. So, you know, using monthly data, let's take a look at, you know, how often we've seen a drop of 16%, you know, between either 4 or 5 months, you know, over any time period. So going all the way back to 1926, you know, we've seen 52 5-month periods that have had a drop worse than what we've seen through Friday on the 12th or on the 13th, excuse me. And 65 6-month periods. So basically, you know, if you were to pick a random date or a random month at some point since 1926, there's about a 1 in 20 chance that the next 5 or 6 months would be worse than what we've just experienced. So, you know, not likely, but not out of the realm of possibility.
Yeah, it's something you have to kind of ready yourself for, because
it's in the cards. You know, this is kind of, this is what you signed up for. This is what investing in the stock market means, or investing in the financial market more broadly means.
But Bob, that would make the stock market investing risky.
Alex, I got some bad news for you. That's kind of what it is. That's why we get these types of returns, or why we get the good types of returns.
I think it's worth unpacking that a little bit, because I do think sometimes that the expectation is, you know, I put money in and more will come out. And that's a given.
Yep. And, you know, if you're talking about a long enough period of time, you know, that's basically been true. But all that stuff in the middle, it gets a little messy. So it's the whole idea behind putting your money into the stock market is that you're putting your money at risk. And, you know, from the market's perspective, so even backing up to first principles, you know, what a stock is it's a share of ownership. It's a small sliver of ownership in a particular company. And every sliver of ownership, every share has to be held. You know, there's no wild shares of, well, I guess Meta now wandering lower Manhattan. Every share is held by someone. And the market will find the price where that's true. The market will find the price where someone is willing to hold each of those shares. And you're not going to put your money into that. You're not going to give your money to, or you're not going to buy some share if you don't think that you're going to get some level of expected return off of that. And the amount of expected return you're going to be looking for is going to be contingent upon how risky you think that company is, how much risk you're taking by owning that share. And you're going to price things based on that assumption. So, you know, the level of return that we get out of stocks or any other financial asset for that matter is completely contingent in the long term on the level of risk there. And, you know, stocks have relatively high levels of expected return, which means they have relatively high levels of underlying risk. And, you know, that's what the market's there to do. It's there to compensate you in that fashion. But you wouldn't get that expected return. There would not be that expected return associated if there was not that risk. And risk, to be risky, has to pop up every once in a while. It can't all be good. And just this semantic concept. Risk is going to hurt every once in a while. And how you deal with that is going to determine what your investment experience looks like.
And also, like 2020 is a great example of this, where the market was down 35%, but ended up at the end of the year 21% higher than where it started. There is this tendency in the U.S. historical data in particular where we just think of risk as a short-term blip. Markets are down, but then they come back up. And it is important to be clear that that doesn't necessarily have to be the case, or that this downturn in a financial market can last longer than it typically has in U.S. historical data. I mean, just ask an investor in Japan around 1990 about how long is it going to take for the stock market to recover from that downturn. It hasn't happened yet. So that risk, yes, stocks generally go up over time, but they're risky. And to be clear, risky doesn't necessarily always just mean short-term risk. It's, it can be a prolonged downturn that we haven't necessarily seen in the United States.
That's actually a really important point. I mean, historically, looking at, if we're looking at American data, basically our good data goes back to 1926. Looking at the past 100 years of American history, it's been a pretty darn good 100 years historically for the, especially the U.S. That's not unfortunately guaranteed. Hopefully we continue with something like that. But, you know, I mean, there's, that's something to consider in the data. If you were, you know, Wade called out Japan or, you know, some of the European countries, you know, that's not necessarily going to be their experience either.
I would ask you, Wade, and this goes back to some of the stuff. I believe it was you that wrote something like this. And there's two things I'm balancing in my head: the current events, market downturn, you know, what's happening now, that kind of thing. But also retirement portfolios, retirement income portfolios. And I think you said, you're right, someone in their 30s, 40s, heck, even early 50s, depending if they're FIRE or not, you know, if they're accumulating, this is kind of a nice opportunity. It's easy for me to say, right? But if somebody is gearing up for retirement, and they're getting into that fragile decade, if you want. This is not to talk about sequence risk or any of that, but it's more the idea that the larger your portfolio is, because you've had, you know, a good run of success, on a nominal basis, money goes down. You follow, Wade? And I think that's an interesting, people realize that, but I think it's good to just make it explicit how there's risk of, like, the longer you're in the market, the more money is actually at risk because your portfolio has grown.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, if suppose you're right, getting close to retirement, and you have $1 million at the start of the year, a 16% drop means you lost $160,000. It may have taken you 20 years of savings at the beginning of your career to
exactly
$160 and $160,000 in the first place. So you really can notice a major significant impact when you have more money, because it means a percentage loss is a bigger amount.
Yeah, to me, I start looking at nominal stuff, and it looks like a hurricane map, you know, where it's, you know, many days, you know, it's that kind of huge range of dispersion of potential losses. I think that's important, and I think that's important when people are doing the mental calculation of what's the retirement strategy that makes sense. And this is why I'll harp it back to, how do you prefer to source retirement income? And let's make sure you have the right one. Because of all we're talking about here, there's someone in the audience is thinking, well, but it's going to recover, and, you know, it'll be fine. I'm going to be disciplined, et cetera, et cetera. Probability based, right? You know, optionality, because they can maneuver right now. If someone's listening to this thinking, I don't want to expose myself to this kind of rigmarole, speaks to another strategy. You don't have to force yourself into this and, you know, and suffer the slings and arrows of the pain that will ensue. You can opt out and choose a strategy that is not predicated on being tethered to the market. So I think that's important.
Yeah, and it's important to understand your preferences or your personality with that. And we did get that test in 2020. If you were able to stay the course in 2020, and you were thinking that you were probability-based at that time, that's probably a good indication, because a lot of people did not make it through that market drop in the spring of 2020 without panicking and selling a significant portion of their stock investments and therefore missing entirely in the subsequent recovery.
And I love that you opened up a segue for Bob, because I want to get into the, I'm not a market timer, but I am on weekends, you know, kind of thing. Because I can't tell you how many folks, as a point of pride, come up to us and say, hey, guess what? I just got out of the market and I saw this downturn and now I'm going to get back in because I'm a genius, you know, that kind of thing. And they love to come out of the woodworks and let us know about how prescient they were. But you know, that's like people telling you they won the lottery. Bob, yeah. What do you think of someone that's in their mind thinking, you know, I got out 2 months ago because whatever, I saw it coming, and now I'm just standing on the sidelines and, you know, ready to get back in when the time is right. There's that scenario, and then there's a scenario of, you know what, I don't need this aggravation. There's the war in the Ukraine isn't resolved. You know, in fact, it may escalate. Who knows if, you know, the gas prices or whatever will ever go back. You know, I'm just going to wait this out for a little bit. If I miss a 15% run up, so be it. But I'd rather miss a 15% run up and rather than expose myself to another 30% drop. Right. But, you know, those are two kind of scenarios. What do you think?
Yeah. So if I could modify that second scenario a little bit, we can get somewhere I think is actually pretty useful. You know, one of the things that people kind of, I don't know if forget or they allied or what it might exactly be, but, you know, when we're talking about staying the course and not making changes to your portfolio, that's contingent on nothing changing in your life or you not learning anything about yourself. You know, Wade brought up 2020. You know, that was a period where a lot of people learned a lot about their true risk tolerance. You know, a lot of people thought their risk tolerance was higher than it really was. We've come off, you know, one of the longer bull markets in markets history, and then we got whacked with the pandemic for, you know, a lot of reasons, but one of them being investments, you know, how the financial markets obviously reacted to that. And that gave a lot of people new information about their risk tolerances, how they're going to react to that. That stuff you do want to kind of incorporate into how you go invest going forward. You do want to incorporate that information in how you design your portfolio. You want to be careful not to kind of overinterpret what's happened recently, but it's new information and very valuable information. So we do want to incorporate that. Where we start getting into trouble is the last part of Alex's statement, where, you know, I'm going to sit this out, it's too risky, but I'm going to get back in at some point in time, whatever we think our trigger is. The problem is we have no way of predicting what the market will do next. You know, we're looking at it. We know where the state of the world is right now. We know what asset prices are right now. I don't know what they're going to be tomorrow.
I'm looking at CNBC and they seem to know where things are. No, it's a serious question because lot of folks, you know, I watch it during lunch really for current events more than anything. But I've just noticed that you're just bombarded with a bunch of BS. And frankly, from advisors that kind of pursue other strategies professionally relative to what they say on TV, which is just mind boggling. Mm-hmm. What? I mean, there's this, and Wade, chime in, but it's just, okay, fine. But you should know, you know, I'm being, you know, half jokingly, you should know what's going to happen next. What the heck am I paying you for?
Yeah, no, and that's fair. I mean, one of the things I always think about with those folks is kind of the incentive structure for talking heads and pundits. You know, if you get enough people out there saying enough stuff constantly, some of them are going to be right. And then they go on to have lucrative careers where they get to be wrong forever, but they called 2008 right, or whatever it might happen to be. They don't know. You know, they may think they have good reasons to think that they can predict what the market's going to do next, or, you know, what's going to happen in 6 months or whatever it might be, but they don't. They're wrong. And the data is emphatic on this. You know, there's no skill or no meaningful skill, I should say, out there, at least among, you know, say, mutual fund managers, where it's real easy to look at the data. And, you know, a lot of them are mutual fund or hedge fund managers who are out there on CNBC or something like that. In fact, you know, talking about, you mentioned Cramer, something he was talking about.
I didn't mention Cramer. You mentioned Cramer.
That's right. I brought up Cramer.
I actually wasn't thinking about Cramer.
but, you know, there's a well-known Cramer effect. You know, when he mentions a stock, or I don't know if this is still true, but a while back, when he mentions a stock, it goes up and then it just crashes right back down. You know, it's all very short term. It has no real meaningful long term effect. But, you know, it kind of goes to these guys don't know anything, or they know a lot of stuff, but it doesn't get them anywhere.
And the caveat to this, though, Bob, when we say these guys don't know anything, we don't know anything either. It's not an insult to them. It's the only issue I take is that they're kind of pretending they know. They're playing a game they can't win. Is ultimately what Bob is saying. But wait, I'm sorry, you were going to say something?
I mean, they could be smart people, but as Bob was alluding to earlier, market prices are determined by the interactions of the decisions of everyone in the financial markets. And there's no way for one individual to be smarter than the aggregate interaction of all investors in the markets. And so the current prices reflect what is known right now. What happens tomorrow or the next day depends on the new information that arrives. And the only way pundits would be able to make correct forecasts would be if they had information that no one else had. And that information has to be more than just a general understanding of the macro economy. It's got to be real information that market players don't have available at this point.
Which, and there's another word for that, Wade.
No, but that guy on Billions makes a ton of money. That TV show, that he's killing it.
But this is
the problem, right? You can't make a TV show of just, hey.
Yeah, it gets real boring real quick.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well, even though consumer media has this issue of, in one part of the magazine, they'll be clear, you can't really forecast the future. But then in another part of the magazine, here's our selection of the 10 mutual funds that are going to do the best job this year. That sort of.
And not only that, the best job in a down market, ready for the rebound. You know, they really drill down.
Yeah, actually, I think a really good example of this is, you know, Peter Lynch. You know, if you remember back, you know, in the 80s, you know, Peter Lynch ran the Magellan Fund. And he was, I think, the singular person who sincerely could do it. He could beat the market on a risk-adjusted basis. You know, however you want to slice and dice the data, you know, he was sincerely adding value. Either that or he was just the luckiest person ever to live. So he's kind of the exception that proves the rule. And he proves the rule because of what happened after he left. So when he left, you know, he could go in and pick whoever he wanted to run Magellan once he left. And he had access to absolutely every piece of information that he could possibly want. He could see, you know, how people were, you know, how they were as workers, how they were as leaders. He could see the decisions they were making, why they were picking the stocks that they were, why they weren't picking the stocks that they weren't. He could see what's going on in their lives, who's had a tough home life, who's got stuff they have to deal with. He had access to absolutely everything.
He's like Facebook.
He's like Facebook. He's got that social graph down, or he did have the social graph down. I'm sure he still does. He's still around. But when you look at the performance of his successors, nothing really interesting. It looks like exactly what the risk profile of the fund would predict. They couldn't beat the market. So if Peter Lynch, who could beat the market, can't pick someone else to do so with access to any piece of information he wants, we can't do it either. You know, that skill is just not there.
The other piece to that that someone could be saying is, well, why don't, okay, fine, pick the current Peter Lynch or pick the Peter Lynch. And there's a whole host of issues involved with identifying.
That's what Peter Lynch was trying to do.
No. But I'm thinking someone may forget that listening in, like, okay, fine. Now let's give it a couple of years. I know, out of 8,000 managers, this is the one to pick because he's going to get us out of this and go from there. But this is another topic, I guess. We don't need to get into too much because we can now dig deeper, like Michael Jordan picking Kwame Brown as a first number one pick, who's a tremendous bust. There's a lot of like interesting side notes, but we'll leave it alone. Going back to the market, I guess. What? Yeah, right. You had here. I mean, we were going off market timing, right?
Yeah.
So we don't. So when do you decide to get back in? Remember that scenario where someone's.
Yeah. So I mean, what I would say is, either don't get out or don't get back in. Actually, one of my first boss out of college. I actually started at Dimensional Funds out of college. The person who headed the financial advisor group, was a financial advisor himself back in the bad old days of, the full service stockbroker. And, he always went around talking about, one of his proudest days as an advisor was, when he had a client come to him and say, I want to get out. The market's just, I want to get out for 6 months or whatever it might happen to be. He would sit him down and say, well, it's your money. I can't stop you from doing this. But if you want to continue working with me, I have this piece of paper here. And I've written up a contract saying that if you take your money out, you're not going to put your money back in because you can't time the market. And if you want to do that, great. Here you go. Have a good day. No one ever signed that piece of paper. No one ever actually took the money out. Because he was able to walk them through the logic here that we're talking about, that we can't predict what's going to happen. What we can say is that over the long term, that there is some fundamental risk and return relationships in play here. And those fundamental risk and return relationships are, by and large, going to be good for you over your investment horizon, over your investment lifetime, when you're looking at retirement. It's not going to be fun all the time, as we're seeing now, as we've seen during, that period during 2020, during 2008, during 2001. We've seen all of these times. And that's just part of investing. So if you're not able to handle some of these short-term or longer-term blips, as Wade has pointed out, you shouldn't be in the market. You shouldn't put your money into these risky sorts of assets. Or at the very least, your asset allocation should be such that you're going to position yourself so you can deal with it, so that you only invest enough in stocks to get the return you need, and then kind of soften the blow, if you will, with bonds.
I would add to that, and I'm going to pose it to Wade. We don't want to presuppose with Bob's answer, though, this total return strategy, and yes. Neither is Bob. I know him well, and he's not doing that either. I don't. We're not saying, hey, look, just call it a day, sit on the sidelines, or go to a 20/80 portfolio. Not at all. It's really more also, there's nothing wrong with not going back in the market, because the way I view that is, hey, guess what? You were in the wrong strategy to begin with. And, when you're in a hole, stop digging kind of vibe, which is what you're saying. But Wade, that I'll pose it to you with what Bob's saying, the importance of making sure a strategy is in play that makes sense for you.
Right, when you're at retirement, if what's going on in the market is just too much, the answer isn't necessarily that you maintain a total returns approach, mm-hmm. but just shift to a lower stock allocation and use more bonds. Because at the end of the day, bonds can be a really inefficient way to fund retirement expenses. You might find that there is some sort of income protection strategy or a risk wrap strategy, or even the time segmentation that uses bonds, but in a different manner to cover short-term expenses. There are a variety of options, and it's just important to find the one that works for you. And if this market volatility doesn't bother you and you're okay, then that might mean to suggest that you are more of a total return person, and that would be the approach you'll want to use in retirement. But just to be clear that approach isn't the right one for everybody, And Bob, maybe to kind of close out today's conversation, I think there's been some subtext making the point, but to perhaps make it more explicit, the market is down 16% to date as we speak. Mm-hmm. What's going to happen the rest of the year? And I think your point is, we don't know, it's not all doom and gloom. The market could continue to go down. It might recover like it has a number of times historically where it's been down and gone back up, but we can't fundamentally say, and therefore we don't know, we don't try to forecast what the market's going to do. We stick to the strategy, right? That's ultimately why you're saying, kind of discouraging this idea of market timing, because we fundamentally don't know what the future will bring.
100%. And I say this with I don't know what the right word is, but look, the easiest thing for us to do is to say, hey, look, the valuations have gone from this PE multiple to this current PE multiple. That's a big drop. Stocks look valuable right now. There's not much left for the drop. Or I could have said there's still historical, another down leg waiting. The easiest thing for us is to kind of write that kind of narrative. Or better yet, even go crazy and start talking about resistance levels and this kind of just silliness. No, I'm serious. That's the easiest mm-hmm. thing for us to do, because you would be listening to it thinking, oh, okay, these guys got it figured out, or they have a plan. What we're effectively saying is you need a dose of humility, take a step back, and let the markets do their thing. That's what we've signed up for. I mean, that's the bottom line without any color behind it. Bob?
Yes, absolutely. I think on that humility point, you know, I mentioned that my first boss back in those bad old days when he was a stockbroker, he was the guy on the local news kind of doing the market report. The thing is, he would always tell the story. I don't know 100% how true this was. He always liked a good story. But he would always say he went in around noon and he recorded two segments, you know, one for if the market went up, one for if the market went down, and they just played the appropriate one. Now, I don't know if they ever screwed it up and played the wrong one, but that's the story he was telling, and that's kind of the situation we're in. You know, over the long term, we can make statements. Yeah. Short term, not so much.
So he just peppered it with the current events that were happening, the Newsday events, and he attributed, well, this will affect it on the upside, or the same event will affect it on the downside, and whatever happened, happened.
Yep.
Lovely, lovely.
Exactly.
But that's what happens every day. That's what happens every day on Power Lunch and all that kind of stuff. Yep. But, you know, so it is. All right. We went a little over our usual time. More to follow. Thank you, Bob, for,
thank you for having me.
Chiming in. Wait.
Yep. Thanks, Bob. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Hope you have a great week. Thanks for listening to Retire with Style.
Wade and Alex are both principals in McLean Asset Management and Retirement Researcher. Both are SEC-registered investment advisors located in Tysons, Virginia. The opinions expressed in this program are for general informational and educational purposes only and are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific securities. To determine which investments may be appropriate for you, consult your financial advisor. All investing comes with a risk, including risk of loss. Past performance does not guarantee future results.